Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast, a Sunday strategy session. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Going to dive into, this is actually a league I had Chad Parsons on to talk about. We've made three deals since then. I think they're interesting, and they're part of a bigger theory that I'm kind of working on. It's probably going to be a piece of the 2020 edition. I got to sort of get it hammered out, but in terms of like odds and those sorts of things. But this basically kind of falls in line with some of the stuff that I've been thinking about. So we've made three trades basically in the past pretty close to 30 days. So since April 20th, these three trades have taken place. And it's, you know, we came in with a pretty identified rookie board, post-draft. Pre-draft, we were, pretty skeptical, I think, of the board. You know, if I could have one of the picks back, I probably would do it. I'll talk about that in a minute. We were pretty skeptical of the rookie class. Thought, you know, anything outside the top 10, 12 is probably going to be expendable. And then, you know, let's see if we can get core assets. So we sat with 106. This is a team that we had, had gotten a bye 1 year and came in the, came in third place, if memory serves, and then were a champion another year. And then we missed the playoffs. So there's been 3 years of the leagues. We led the league in point. We finished with a bye 1 year, won the next year, and then came in just outside the playoffs this past year. We're sort of ransacked by injuries. So we're in a good spot. We've never really gotten receiver figured out totally. It's sort of the breakdown of it. I think we're good, not great at the position. Like Terry McLaurin's really helped, but we made a deal where we traded away AJ Brown, the right to trade AJ Brown, and that was a big miss. We ended up getting Rager the next year, so that's a disappointment. But lo and behold, like we were sitting there with, we have Evans, we've got McLaurin, and then we've got a whole bunch of other guys, right? We've got John Brown, we've got like an assortment of guys, John Brown, Mims, Rager, AJ Green, Hamler. So it's like sort of all over the place in terms of exposure. You know, if we get a hit out of there, it's probably a good return on some of the, and you know, if we could go over 1.5 on that, it'd be excellent return on that portion of the roster. We're sitting there. We have some depth at running back. This is a two quarterback league. It's two tight end as well. So depth is a big deal in terms of the positions. At running back, we've done well to hit. We've got Eckler. We got Gibson. We have Harris, Mostert. We have, coming into this, we have Connor and Chubb as well. Chubb, Eckler, Gibson, probably the top three in terms of the guys there. And then we have Russell Wilson and Goff. So that's basically how we sort of entered the offseason. As we sort of came into the offseason, I've never been totally comfortable just rostering two quarterbacks. It's a two quarterback league, not super flex. So you do, if Russell Wilson goes down, if Goff goes down, we're up a crick because there's no real answer. We've got developmental guys, Ryan Finley, and some one injury away guys. We had Brian Hoyer, Sean Mannion, but Nick Mullins. We'll see how that turns out, where he ends up. But a big part of that was to try and, hey, let's see if we can develop someone as a backup and just have some guys there in case something breaks poorly in the league. We sort of have guys that can do that. That's basically been our quarterback three strategy, which honestly hasn't felt great, right? If we've done some things well, we've done some things not well. That's been one of the things that I've felt pretty uncomfortable with. We tried to get Rosen to be a quarterback three, passed on some key guys that we shouldn't have passed on. And that's the reason we don't have a quarterback three, essentially. So that's where we came in. So had 106, had 205, 201, 205, and then we had 309 as well. There were extra picks that we had. We had our own assortment too. So we were 106. So we're 106, 206, 306. And then basically we had 406, 506, I think it's five rounds. And we also had two additional seconds and an additional third. Those will play in here in a minute. So that's basically it in terms of where we were at coming into this. So again, we're going to go best player. We're going to sort of do that angle on it. But we need to be, we are open to moving, right? We're open to moving. And so I always like to be ahead on pedigree. I always like to be ahead on draft capital. And this is a good example. This exercise is a good example of sort of why it's important to do that. So we were in negotiations. The guy came out and was like interested in trading for running backs. As new to the league, willing to give up future capital. So we instantly were like, okay, like we can sort of do this. So we sort of kicked around the tires a little bit, went back and forth with the guy. Ultimately, we ended up giving Nick Chubb, and we got back in return Keenan Allen, 309, and a 2023 first. 309, we end up including in another deal in the future. Again, that's just let's see if it's a mover on the board type piece. We know at that point it's probably not a core piece to our team. Part of our calculus when we made the deal was, listen, we have some depth at running back. We can sort of masquerade that spot, right? That if we sort of rank Chubb, he's probably, he might be first or second on the board. But when you slot up the other guys, it's not that far, from Chubb to something that we can replace him with. We can stream one injury away guys. We have some. And we figured we probably would add to that stable, that we sort of know our team build. That's kind of the direction we're going. We've got Gio, which is probably rolling snake eyes on a one injury away job this year. But we've got Connor, Dylan, Harris. We'll see how that turns out. With basically a core of Eckler and Gibson, we're giving up Chubb. It seems like a big, kind of a loss. But we are sliding up into that three spot, basically, some other guys. We got Joshua Kelly, Madison Mostert, Pollard. So we had plenty of options there that we'd like, hey, maybe it's a, it's a two games here and a three games here, and it's a one-off, 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 and then four games out of somebody else. All of those things are possible, but we have plenty of options to do that with. And we can play wide receivers in the flex, too. We have some of those options as well. So Keenan Allen's going to come in, be basically a wide receiver 1/2. Him and Evans going to be a top two with McLaurin as a top three. Feel much more confident with McLaurin with that top three than I did, going Evans, McLaurin, and then John Brown as a third or whoever it was going to be. Feel a lot more comfortable having Allen there. And in our team build and in our construction, we kind of view Chubb and Allen pretty similarly in terms of the longevity that they might have, the longevity that they might have, and their sort of contending helpful window to us is pretty close. And so when you sort of look at that, you can say, okay, so we're basically adding additional capital on top of that. And that's basically, if they perform anywhere near close, that's a win, right? That's kind of what our calculus was. To give you an idea, last year in the format, Nick Chubb scored 190.9 points. That's good for 17.3 a game. 17.4 a game, actually, compared to Allen, who scored 245 points and averaged 17.5 points per game last year. So again, I do those things stay the same? Maybe not. Could Chubb go up? Sure. Could Allen go down? Absolutely. Is it possible the other side is true as well? Yes. But they're very close. And to us, and again, it could be a couple year, it could be a 2-3 year window here. You never know. With Chubb, he's not guaranteed anything past this year. And if it's an injury, all of a sudden you've got a guy in his mid-20s who's coming off an injury. That's a bad career arc. So we're moving out of that tier has been something I've been trying to do with the running back position. So basically we move Chubb for Allen, which we see as largely a lateral move, add a third and get a future first. And so for us, that was pretty good. We can sort of, and we kind of know ourselves as being, listen, we're more capable or we're better at building in running back depth than we might necessarily be at selecting wide receiver. That's just kind of a place that we'd rather be in. And so we went and basically, it's basically an arbitrage, right? It's two different guys across positions and adding future capital. So that's where it comes out. Almost instantaneously, we start getting notifications on offers, and it's largely revolving around DeAndre Swift is ultimately where it settles on. And I sort of view DeAndre Swift as, if you sort of, you know, I put out a Twitter poll on this, and some people, the answer wasn't what I expected it to be. I guess it was what I expected it to be, but there was a lot more in it that was not, there was basically Akers and Taylor both had higher odds of being the running back one by the market. You know, I said basically from last year's class, the, you know, Akers, Taylor, Dobbins, and Swift, of those guys, who's the most likely to finish as the running back one? And Swift came in third. I actually think he's number one. Just because I think he can get to that receiving volume and get the rushing volume. And I'm just not sure the other guys can, especially Taylor now. I think the case for Taylor is a little overstated, honestly. So we get in an offer, cold offer. It's Kyle Allen, Ryan Fitzpatrick, DeAndre Swift. And it is for Christian Kirk, 201, 205, 306, and a 2022 first. So there's a future first. You know, it's we have an additional future first in 2023. They want a 2022 one. So that's initially the offer. We're not really big on Kyle Allen. But Ryan Fitzpatrick really filled a need for us. And in terms of being a quarterback three, with the potential to start over Goff. And so that's, you know, the sneaky part about that is like, oh yeah, now you fix quarterback three. Well, maybe we actually even upgraded quarterback two, at least in the near term. So that was an interesting sort of subplot to that. Again, we get the DeAndre Swift offer in the door, and almost instantly I was like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, and this is sort of the theory that I'm working on about the core asset thing. Like, I'm giving up a whole lot of non-core assets for a core asset. And like, you kind of got to do that. You got to figure out a way to get that one done. And so it goes back and forth a little bit. So we return fire with Kirk. We take out Kyle Allen, basically. Return fire with Kirk, 201, 306 in the future first. We're willing to give the future first to get Swift. And in return, we're going to get back Fitzpatrick and Swift. So that was basically taking out Kyle Allen and then taking out the 205. We get another offer back in. It's basically increasing assets. He wanted Ryan Finley and a swap for Andy Dalton. Again, that didn't help us at all. It sort of goes back and forth a little bit. And then he ultimately sends back to us Fitzpatrick, Swift for Tony Pollard, Christian Kirk, 201, 306, and a future first. So that's really looking a lot like that really kind of values Tony Pollard at like a 205 type level when you sort of deconstruct and reconstruct these. He sent us another one, and this is why I say that. He sent us another one. It was Ryan Fitzpatrick, DeAndre Swift for Christian Kirk, 201, 205, 309, and that future first in 2022. And so the Pollard piece of that essentially is 205 and the move from 306 to 309 was sort of how that was the moving pieces on that. So he was basically valuing Pollard at 205 and a couple picks slide up in the third round, which isn't totally unreasonable. As we were sort of sitting there, we said, you know, what's the most likely outcome that we get at that 205 range? And there is a consolation comp pick for the Toilet Bowl winner at 113. So that's actually a pick back further in the round. So that's actually 18 overall. 205 is actually 18 overall because there's 13 first round picks. So we were, you know, kicking it back and forth. And I said, I just think I value Pollard more than that. I just think I value Pollard at a higher level than that. I don't think we're going to be able to get
a Pollard-like player, a Pollard-like role at that cost. And so ultimately we settled on the Ryan Fitzpatrick, get Ryan Fitzpatrick and Swift and give Christian Kirk 201, 205, 309 and the future first. When you sort of look at where we got those picks, the 205 was a trade back that we traded down from the ability to select AJ Brown a couple years ago. And we got a future second, and that was a future second in this deal. The 201 that we gave up, none of these picks were actually ours originally, by the way. So that the 309 was the pick we got in the Keenan Allen trade. And the 201 was the pick we got in the Rosen a Rosen deal a couple years ago. So again, kicking cans down the road on picks can really give you flexibility and the ability to make moves sort of as they come due. So that's a big part of it. We were then basically with our own allotment of picks. So basically all that pick, all those deals were essentially done on savings. And a big thing with me, and I try and do this in actual real life, is not deal on credit, is deal on savings. And that way I'm not paying future capital. I'm not, you know, loaning my future for now. I am saving for the future in the present, and then in the future I can sort of do, I can leverage these deals, and that's basically what it is. You know, the 2022 second was ours, but we had an extra future first to kick around, and ultimately we think Swift can help us make that pick really late. So can Fitz, right? Fitz, the big part of that deal was Fitz protects that pick. This is almost like a lottery type situation in the NBA draft, right, where they do those, oh, it's like a top four protected pick or whatnot. Fitz protects that pick from being really high because he guards against the calamity. He guards against the, you know, the injury that totally tanks our team, the 25-point loss of Russell Wilson, which turns into a three loss difference, right? Three more losses in the course of a season if we can't replace that. That's what Fitz protects against. And again, does he raise our floor? Does he raise our ceiling? Sure, a little bit. But more so than that, the most important part is that it protects that future pick. So one of the things from this that I do think you can take is when you're sort of picking on these future picks, when you're sort of picking on, and whether it's picking on them or trying to preserve your own, I do think thinking about those types of concepts is really sort of 400 level trading, right? Figure out a way to, hey, let's figure out a way to insulate this, whether it's the backup quarterback or whether it's, you know, another injury away guy or when it's trading. You know, I've talked about this with the AJ Green deal a couple years ago where I gave Damian Williams for basically, if it was Damian Williams and another piece, I think James Washington, for essentially AJ Green and a pick 2 years out. Me taking AJ Green was taking the side that was going to make that pick late in my estimation. It wasn't going to be Damian Williams that was going to make that pick late. The more likely outcome is it would have been AJ Green that made that pick late. So again, neither of them ended up mattering, but I do think that and the pick turned really early, 101 early. So I do think when you sort of are looking at those things, trying to figure out ways to implement that, that's just another case of it. So, you know, just trying to figure out and structure deals in a way that give you multiple outs, but also, you know, increase your ceiling for a pick or preserve your floor when you're giving away a pick, right? You don't want to sit there with this pick and Swift blows out a knee in the first week of preseason and then Russell Wilson, you know, blows out an MCL and all of a sudden, like, this is that pick's 101, right? That's what you don't want to, that's what you want to protect against. And by taking Fitzpatrick back, we definitely protected against that because we do have risk. Right? We're sort of flying without a net at quarterback, without a good net, without any sort of predictable net. It's a net. It's got a lot of holes in it, and made out of, you know, like kite wire instead of like the reinforced rope. So that's all that basically solved a lot of our problems. So we end up
we basically say, hey, listen, we're just gonna sit and pick, right? 106, 206. Let's see if we get a move up the board. We can try and do that. You know, get to a spot with Sermon. We haven't gotten there yet. This draft is still going on. It's the time we're talking. As the time I'm recording, I should say. It started like a week after the NFL draft. But the next shoe has dropped. So we are sitting at 106 in the rookie draft, and we're perfectly sitting pretty. You know, we said essentially this is kind of like the Patriots. Right? Essentially, we're sitting there. We've got the opportunity to, we're probably going to be looking at the ability to take either running back one or a quarterback with the spot. We finished worse than we thought we were going to finish. So we're sort of gifted this pick, this great situation at 106 in a rookie draft that has some of the needs that we need to fill. I was almost sure it wasn't going to be Pitts, but that would have been awesome if he fell. I didn't think there was any chance that would happen. You know, maybe a 1% chance, but it didn't. So he ends up going off the board at 3. Najee Harris goes at 2. Trevor Lawrence at 1. Then it's Trey Lance at 4. And so we're sitting there at 6, and we're like, all right, well, what do you want to do? And basically we said we have a couple of options. And we settled on there's basically 3 players that we're interested in. It's Fields, Etienne, and Chase. And you know, what sort of order do we have them in? And I said, well, I've got Etienne over Chase. And Chad said, that's fine. But we have, you know, well, what's the deal between Fields and Etienne? And, you know, my take on it was, and I think we agreed on this. I wouldn't speak exactly for Chad, but I think we came at the same spot was, listen, we're sitting here at 6. This is a pick that's earlier than we should have. We sort of got lucky. You know, we got unlucky last year. We're the beneficiaries of this now in a really good quarterback class. We've got Goff, we've got Wilson, we've got Fitzpatrick. Like if we get gifted a long-term quarterback, like you kind of have to take that in the format where it's 2 quarterbacks, you know, and you kind of have to take that. And so we're sitting there, you know, Lance goes off at 4, and it looked like the person at 5 needed quarterback. It definitely looked like the person at 5 had a need at quarterback. And so I was kind of like, he's going to take Fields, which, you know, if he took Fields, right, then we're there with Etienne, that's fine. You know, that's like, we weren't upset with that, but the biggest, you know, the big deal would have been if Fields fell to us. So we're sitting there, and we ultimately get the pick comes in, and it's Chase. So the board has broken excellent for us. Harris is gone and Chase is gone to basically force our quarterback to us at 6. We have Fields above. I have Fields at or above Lance. You know, our quarterback 3, I should say. No worse than quarterback 3 falls to us. I could sort of go either way on Lance and Fields. I could go either way on that. And so we say, all right, well, now we sort of know what the idea is. Well, and this was again, instead of just picking, we said, well, I wonder what's Deshaun Watson's trade value right now? Like just spitballing ideas. And so we offered Deshaun Watson, we offered 106, and we basically kicked you know, some trade offers around just to sort of see what we could get. Hey, listen, we have the ability to take a quarterback right now. Do we want to do it? You know, do we want to make this happen? We can fix our quarterback room right now. How do we want to do it? And so we get the, we send out some offers, and it's basically, it's a couple of different things that we do basically construct wise. It's Watson, it's, you know, for Kenyon Drake in a late second, Watson for Darrington Evans and Miles Gaskin, you know, just kicking around some ideas. There's a couple more here. Oh, Deshaun Watson and Brandon Cooks for 106 and, 106 for Deshaun Watson and Brandon Cooks. Again, just kicking around different ideas on how to try and fix the thing. They all get rejected, but a counter comes back in, and it is simply put Watson for 106 straight up.
And that's rejected ultimately. So we get Watson for 106 straight up in our inbox. At about the same time, we get a couple of other deals in, which was interesting. DeAndre Swift in the pick for Mahomes. I didn't actually see that one in the order in which they came in. Probably would have debated that one about whether or not to do that. But basically, this is a similar profile with a little bit more risk than I'm not giving up Swift in. So I think this is ultimately the better deal. Like, I could have gone either way on that, and I probably would have, I don't know. I didn't see that one by the time we actually accepted the deal. I was out to a birthday dinner with my wife, which is a crazy statement to make after a year and a half of, or a year plus of sitting home. We actually got out. We actually got some other offers in as well while we were on the phone talking about this and didn't see it. Again, I don't know if there was stuff there to work with or not. It ended up being like a lot of stuff. Basically, Prescott, we would get Prescott and give Dylan, Harris, Madison, Pollard, Mims, 106 and 206. Essentially give all our depth for another elite quarterback. So basically the difference in that is the difference between Watson and Prescott is essentially Dylan, Harris, Madison, Pollard, Mims in a second, right? That's essentially the equivalency there. We said, you know, we had already decided on taking, it actually came in seconds before we accepted the Watson offer. So, and actually the Swift one came in, no wonder I didn't see it, because it came in 90 seconds before we actually hit accept on the offer. And we had decided before accepting to actually accept it. So, they were basically like kind of late emails that came in after the deal was already done. No wonder I didn't see that, because I would have thought more about that probably, and explored a counter for sure on that Swift Mahomes deal, but ultimately didn't end up seeing it. Watson and Watson for 106. So this basically, essentially, the only time we give up an actual pick in this three pick deal, this three pick transition that we make, and this basically turns into, for us, you know, I sort of view the future first as core assets. So we give one, we get one. So that's neutral. That's definitely neutral. We give Chubb and get back Allen, which is essentially neutral on core assets, where we got a future first on the one which we ended up, you know, moving up a year and the other trade to give out. So that ends up being neutral. The Allen trade's a win for us, because we get back a second core asset, that future first, which we end up giving in the Swift deal. And so that's basically three core assets in the Swift deal. And then we trade 106 for Watson. So we went from basically, you know, a quarterback at 106, you could sort of pencil that in as kind of a core asset. But Swift is a much better core asset, right? Swift is kind of like the elite core asset. Whereas 106 is, you know, maybe a core asset. And so basically we move from, you know, there's a lot of other pieces that go on in this, but when you sort of boil it all down, it comes back to basically being Chubb and 106 for Allen, Swift, and Watson, with some other pieces around there that are non-core. So I don't totally advocate just giving away non-core assets. I think that they're important, but I do think when you get the opportunity to package a couple of non-core assets, especially in picks in rookie drafts, to make them into being DeAndre Swift level assets, like you do it. You figure out a way to make it done. So through the course of three deals, we got back four core assets and essentially gave three and some ancillary stuff. Here, the interesting part about this is, you know, what do we do? So we've got Fitz, we've got Goff, we've got Allen, or we've got Watson, and we have Ross. And so, you know, in any week that Watson and Ross play, like, that's a tough get around. We've got Goff as the insurance on Watson. This is essentially the perfect scenario to trade for Watson for us, because we've got enough it's essentially the same thing as bringing in a rookie quarterback that you don't know what you're going to get from him. But we know that we have a lot of ceiling. And if we lose a year from him this year, I think that it's a very real I think that's a very real possibility. But if it's not, right, if things break our way, it has elite ceiling, which would not cost 106. It would cost a lot more than that. So that's basically, you know, that's kind of the upside risk. And when you sort of put 106 next to Watson, Fields next to Watson, we know, like, we think Fields can be the real deal. We know Watson can be the real deal. It's just a matter of if he's going to play. I think those are two different questions, and I kind of have a much better feeling on the Watson angle, as we've sort of gotten more information. So that's basically it in terms of how we did this basically three-trade transition. So basically, getting another getting a wide receiver, getting a core quarterback, and, you know, an upgrade at running back, ultimately. So that's pretty much the deal. So I figured this is a good time to be thinking about how to move around rookie boards, different ideas to incorporate, you know, constantly trying to add back picks. And people say, oh, you know, look at the rookie classes. They can really suck. Well, they can really suck, but the assets are nice and the flexibility is nice because it allows you to do different deals, right? If we didn't have a future first, we'd never been able to get in on Watson. Right. If we didn't have this first round pick, if we were dealing on credit, we wouldn't be able to do it for Watson. But because everything sort of broke right for us and we were sort of, you know, pick neutral, essentially, we were able to have a little luck go our way and then capitalize on it. And that's part of the big deal about, you know, being proactive in the trade market, but not necessarily giving away and mortgaging your future. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.